When she was here back in 2011, she certainly smiled a lot and seemed keen to talk to everyone and wore various shades of green and threw in the few words of Irish in her speech up in the castle. But did Queen Elizabeth really have a good time when she made her first visit to these shores? Well, yes, she did. How do I know this? Because shortly after that visit, that's precisely what she told my sister, at Buckingham Palace, when she pinned an OBE onto her jacket. They were all chat, the pair of them, and then the Irish question arose when Pauline buttonholed her about the recent visit. Well, said her Madge, in that quiet but extraordinarily posh voice, it was most enjoyable. So there you have it, straight from the horse's mouth. Elizabeth Windsor had a ball in Ireland. It was a great occasion at Buckingham Palace on that June day, and the culmination of a series of events that began on a snowy evening the previous December, as my family gathered to celebrate a milestone birthday for my father. There's something else to mark as well, said Alan, my brother-in-law. Pauline's up for an OBE in the New Year's Honours List.
Yeah, we all said, laughing.
No, really, he said. For her services to education, for all her years as a groundbreaking head teacher in Yorkshire, and for her more recent work as an educational troubleshooter, parachuted into numerous problematic and deprived schools, tasked with raising their standards and saving them from closure. We all looked at Pauline. It was true. And so it began. When would it happen? Between January and July. How many guests could she bring? Three. Actually into Buckingham Palace? Into that grand ballroom to watch her getting the yoke pinned onto her jacket? Yes, three. So that was Alan, her husband, Steph, her only child, and moi, her only sibling. Could I set aside my anti-monarchy instincts for just one day, my sister couldn't resist asking. Could I what? And so it was that the day itself arrived. Ah, yes, the day itself. I woke in my hotel room at 5 a.m. It was a spectacular June morning, complete with clear azure blue sky. So I got up and sat at the window, watching transfixed as the city came alive. Earth has not anything to show more fair, wrote William Wordsworth in the opening lines of Upon Westminster Bridge, his beautiful sonnet about London. This city now doth like a garment wear the beauty of the morning. As indeed it did. And so, 4 hours after my literary musings, we happy few were taxiing down the Mall, dressed in our finery and clutching our passports and bright yellow invitations, the golden tickets to give us entry to the inner sanctum. Tourists were heaving outside the palace as we approached the gate. A quick flash of our invites and passports at the friendly bobby and, hey presto, we were in. Across the front apron of the grounds we traipsed, into the quadrangle beyond, then up the red carpeted steps and into the palace. With the star of our show gone off to join her fellow VIPs, we three headed for the ballroom and were amazed to find ourselves escorted to the very front row. We couldn't believe our luck. Posh frocks and hats dominated the roomscape. Oil paintings hung around the walls. Red, velvet-covered banquet seating lined the sides of the room and an orchestra played somewhere towards the rear. We looked at our watches. Still over an hour to kick off, Steph said. But then, up stepped an elegant-looking palace official to talk us through proceedings. Applause etiquette, if you don't mind. When to stand for the Queen. What to do at the end. That sort of thing. Before we knew it, it was 11 a.m. A door opened to our right, and in came the Queen herself, escorted by two Gurkha soldiers and five yeomen of the guard, resplendent in their red regalia. First impressions? That she was tiny, and that her silk frock with ivory background and tiny splashes of colour in green and yellow was both understated and extremely elegant. hooked over her arm meanwhile, in exactly the same way that my granny used to carry hers, was an oversized black patent handbag. She walked to the slightly raised platform in front of us, set down the bag, and proceedings began. We three were a bit on edge, looking to our left all the time as the queue snaked forward, nervously waiting for that first glimpse. And suddenly, there she was, our Pauline, about to meet the Queen of England and to be acknowledged for all her wonderful work. She moved forward, from first base at the door to second base beside a minder just a few feet from the Queen. "Pauline, Mrs. Pendlebury," boomed the man with the voice announcing each recipient, "for services to education." My sister walked forward, curtsied subtly, no need to lose the run of yourself when you're Irish, and then approached the Queen, who leaned forward and pinned the coral-ribboned medal on her jacket. And then they chatted, and chatted, about all sorts apparently, including the visit to Ireland. Then finally, the Queen shook my sister's hand, Pauline backed away, turned, caught our eyes, walked past us and out of the ballroom. The rest of the ceremony was a bit of a blur, and then, all done and dusted, we stood for the national anthem, instrumental only, no singing allowed, as the Queen gathered up the handbag and exited stage right. We rushed to find my sister. "Where's the yoke?" we asked her, expecting to see the medal gleaming on her jacket. She had it in its box. And that's where it stayed for the rest of the day, while we wandered the corridors of the palace to find the loo, 4-star, old-fashioned hotel standard, a bit like Boswell's in Dublin, mingled in the quad for photos, sat in the sunshine in Green Park as Pauline Pendlebury, OBE, spoke to our proud parents back at home, and later, while we drank Prosecco in Franco's on German Street, where we were joined by the rest of the sisters' lunch party, all of whom had travelled from far and wide to help her celebrate in style. It was some day. But then, why wouldn't it be? For as a friend back in Dublin texted me later that afternoon, "She's some woman." And no, she didn't mean the Queen.